Covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. It's Brewers Extra Innings. Now, live from American Family Field, here's your host, Dominic Catronio.
Shucks. Just the Dodgers, man. They got your numbers sometimes. They're a really good team. Best team that money could buy, as some would say. But hey, they won tonight, fair and square, 5-2, the final. They beat up Freddy Peralta. The Brewers couldn't get anything done against Clayton Kershaw. We'll break it all down with Craig Kishon in a little bit. I'm Dominic Catronio. If you want to join us here, it's 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620. You can call in, you can text in, and we'll have some conversations about this one. There are a few things that jump out to me as we'll start talking about Freddy Peralta, because I think that's the number one thing that everybody wants to talk about. And I want to say something that might be unpopular, and it's what I feel is that, look, I know Freddy is the opening day starter, and I know that he is seen as the quote-unquote number one. And the way that this season started, he really picked up from where he left off last second half, where you're thinking, okay, yeah, this is the guy. And in fact, in April, and this includes one clunker in there, in April, the team went 6-0 in his first six starts. He was 3-0. He had a 3.21 ERA. He had only allowed four homers in his first 33 innings of the season. But since starting 6-0, he is now, and the team is, 8-10 in games that Freddy Peralta starts. And I know we label him as a one. That is not a number one record. It just isn't. And let's also be honest, too. The entire spectrum of Freddy Peralta's career, aside from the second half last season and maybe the first half in 2021 when he earned his first and only All-Star nod, those are really the only regions of his career that he has pitched like an ace. Remember the second half of 21, there was a shoulder issue in there because the pitchers were still hitting in 2021 and a lot of other stuff that happened there. And he pitched like an ace in the postseason, but he had to get pulled because the Brewers were begging for offense in Game 4 against Atlanta. But I guess the larger point I'm trying to make here is Freddie is being asked to be a number one, and maybe his ceiling is not to be a number one. Maybe his ceiling is really to be a three. And quite frankly, being a three isn't a bad job in the big leagues, okay? It's when the team needs you to be a quote-unquote stopper, right? The guy that the last few years that you would say, all right, well, Corbin Burns going today, he's your stopper. All right, well, Brandon Woodruff's going today, boom, he's your stopper. Freddy Peralta's going today, you're like, So you're hoping he can click it into gear sooner as opposed to later, because let's also be honest and be fair to him here, because it's not like some nobody hit a home run off him today. You've got a future Hall of Famer in Mookie Betts, another future Hall of Famer in Shohei Ohtani who went yard off him today. Let's not act like this is some 4A guy who you've never heard of and it's a bad team on the other. Let's also be honest with that, too. He gave up four runs in six innings, which maybe most other nights gives you a chance to win, but when it's against the Dodgers, it feels a lot worse. And there were flaws in this attack today from Freddie, in my opinion. Once again, we saw the usual, way too many pitches. And the inning that jumped out to me was the second inning. He gets a 1-2-3 first, no big deal, on 11 pitches. So now you're through the so-called gauntlet, if you will, of Ohtani, Betts, and Freeman. And I'm not trying to disrespect Teoscar here, but with Teoscar leading off an inning, you'd much rather have that than have him come up with a man on base. And then he gets Teoscar to strike out on six pitches. He gets Lux to fly out on five pitches. But he walks Will Smith, who came in barely hitting over 100 here in August. He walks Will Smith on seven pitches. And then he eventually fell behind 2-0 on Miguel Rojas before getting him to ground out. That's an inning that just can't be 21 pitches long. Those are the innings that you look and like, man, how is he already at 60 pitches in the third inning or in the fourth inning or whatever? And those are the innings that you look back and like, man, nothing happened in that inning. And it all got away from him very, very quickly. And then even in the third inning, leading to the home run, it was an infield hit from Kike Hernandez on a bouncing ball up the middle. Okay, no big deal. The Dodgers, they understand, especially the bottom three guys in their order, they understand their role. Set it up for the big boppers up top. Kevin Kiermaier, hey man, I'm hitting like a buck 90. I don't mind hitting a sack bunt here to set up for Ohtani. Ohtani ended up grounding out. Okay, so maybe you escaped here and you got a chance to escape the frame. And Mookie comes up after he made him look silly back in the first inning. He misses over the middle of the plate, and boom, home run, which is a familiar scene, an all-too-familiar scene from Freddy Peralta this season with the home runs. He's now allowed 21 home runs this season. He allowed 26 all of last season. He is approaching a career high in that category. I think the number one thing with the usage and things that we can see that are certainly different from Freddy Peralta to this point in the season versus years past is he's simply not fastball Freddy anymore. This has not been his MO as of late. He threw 57% fastballs today, which is about his season average. But the thing that alarms me about his most important pitch, arguably, is how few he was throwing it for, or how little he was throwing it for a strike. 35 of 55 fastballs were strikes, which, just the raw numbers, doesn't sound crazy. Less than two-thirds were strikes. And I know what you're thinking, well, Dom, you can't throw all your pitches for strikes. You're not wrong, but if it's your fastball and you're having uncompetitive misses high and out of the zone and you're facing a team that is really competitive in the zone, the Brewers are getting a taste of their own medicine with long at-bats, no chase, bat-to-ball ability, and the fastball has to start with all that. Another thing that alarms me about Freddy Peralta, and this has kind of been true for a few months now, and we saw it happen earlier in the year too, but especially lately, his struggles with men on base. And over his last two starts, he's been working exclusively out of the stretch, maybe to try to, you know, get this back on track for him, that it's not a big deal when he switches to have a man on base. But this is a stat that kind of blew my mind. He was less than 50% strikes with men on base. He threw 26 pitches with a man on. Only 12 of them were strikes. And furthermore, 19 of those 26 were fastballs. He goes back to what's familiar. He goes back to what he's known as Fastball Freddy, and that's when he's making mistakes with men on base. Both the home runs had a man on base. Now, granted, the Ohtani home run was on a 3-0 pitch that was off the outside corner. I think he was still trying to be careful. He just caught, he didn't pick a vertical angle. He didn't pick, am I going to go up or am I going to go down? He missed in the middle. Even though it was off the plate away, that's where Shohei likes it. And he hit a ball. I don't think I've ever seen a lefty hit a ball to that region of the ballpark here at American Family Field that hard, too. And he's a freak. And at the end of the day, if I would have told you that it was like scraped together a couple of runs, six innings, and four runs allowed against Freddie, maybe you'd feel a little bit differently. I'm not saying you'd be satisfied. But the fact that it was two home runs against two bona fide stars, superstars, makes you just feel like that's what we've seen. We know that can happen from Freddy Peralta. I do think the Brewers can find a way to rework his command. I mean, clearly you could see him working with his rotation, working through his mechanics today. He was getting a lot of two-strike counts, but like we're used to, he's not getting strikeouts, and maybe this is a bad matchup for him, too, in the fact that he's a guy that nibbles. He's a guy that relies on chase. The Dodgers are not a team that chases. They're comfortable with two strikes. They're also a fly ball home run team. Freddy Peralta is a fly ball home run pitcher. And the last thing here on Freddy that I've observed, talking about the fastball Freddy stuff, year over year, his fastball usage has dropped since 2021, just overall using it less. Now, it was all the way down to 52% in 2021. It was up to 55% in 2022, and the batting average has slowly climbed against it. The slugging has really climbed against it as he allowed another couple of home runs on the pitch today. And the other thing that jumps out, and this is going to be a really nerdy note, the whiff is down. He's getting less swings and misses on the fastball, and I think part of it has to do with his stride and his mechanics. He's not getting nearly as much extension as we saw him get even just a couple of seasons ago. That's just measuring how far down the mound you're throwing. And he was over 7 feet on average with his fastball when he arrived, even into 21, even into 2022. He's under 7 feet. Now, that may not sound significant. 6.7 is his average extension this season. The reason why that's significant is because that's the difference of actually throwing harder, which he is actually throwing harder, but not being as deceptive. If he's throwing 93 with over 7 feet of extension, that creates a little bit of deception and makes it difficult for the hitter to pick up the fastball. Whereas you take a little bit of that extension out, it's essentially down half a foot since 2020. When you take that down, and even though he's throwing harder, 94 miles an hour on average this season, the hitters are able to pick it up a little bit sooner. Maybe they're able to see it. Doesn't have the same jump that it used to have. And I think that kind of all encompasses of what's going wrong with Freddie's fastball. 855-616-1620. Craig Gajon's going to join us in just a moment. A couple of texts here. Peralta, what a disappointment. After tonight, he's given up 25 homers. He's actually 21. You could feel the air deflate out of the Brewers' confidence meter after the first two-run homer to Betts. Seems that Peralta's been giving up one or two homers every game he's pitched for the last 2 months, and he ain't doing it. That's from Mike in Colorado. This one, Brewers got beat by three Hall of Famers tonight, and having to go against a great lefty in the first game of a series doesn't help. That one from Doug. Yeah, I mean, you got Kershaw, you've got Betts, and you've got Ohtani that contributed tonight. Don't forget about Freddie Freeman. He's certainly on a Hall of Fame path as well. We'll get into some other of these texts, too. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Right here in your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Catronio. 855-616-1620 is the phone number. You can call in. You can text in as well. I want to remind you that Brewers Extra Innings all season long is brought to you by Fifth Third Bank. With a local Milwaukee team, Fifth Third Bank also knows how to hit out of the park. They've been serving businesses in the area for nearly 15 years, offering industry-specific expertise and local decision-making capabilities to help your business succeed. It's commercial banking value that only Fifth Third can deliver. Fifth Third Bank, National Association member, FDIC. Hey, Mark and West Bend, appreciate you listening. You may have missed it earlier in the season. We're done talking about Trevor Bauer. And if I see another text about Trevor Bauer, we're a team that has eight starters. Like, call in. Tell me why. Because tell me why 29 other teams don't want him either. There's a reason Trevor Bauer isn't here. And it's not just because, oh, it's not just because the investigation got dropped. And there's a lot of other stuff that just simply I cannot tell you of how heavy this stuff is and how deep this really goes. But no, Trevor Bauer is not going to be a Brewer. Drop it. Move on. I know a lot of folks on social media keep hitting that button. It's not going to happen. Stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen, Gretchen. Anyway, the Brewers today offensively were stymied by Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw is really, really impressive, to say the least, today, especially given a few things under the hood here from what I saw from Clayton Kershaw. I know the velo said 90. I know you saw some 88s in there. But the slider is still lethal. The curveball is still that majestic to the heavens and back down to your knees, just buckler. Those are still two Hall of Fame pitches. And furthermore, when you get under the hood and when you look at the fastball, I know it says 90 miles an hour. But the other thing about it, as we talk about the ride, and we talk about the way that we can measure how much a pitch, how efficiently a ball carries, his fastball has always been one of the truest fastballs in the game, meaning it's straight, and it carries, and it holds. When it was 97, it was doing the same. In the pre-StatCast days, I would have loved to have seen the inverted, the induced vertical break, what his vert numbers were on those peak fastballs, right, in 2013, 2014, because there was some impressive, impressive ride on those. And he's still getting impressive ride. He's still popping 18s and 19s. League average is 14. I mean, he's popping vert numbers better than Freddie Peralta's vert numbers. And that's really deep in the sauce here, meaning the ball is holding its line and it's carrying all the way to the plate better than Freddie Peralta's fastball is, even though Freddie's fastball is thrown firmer. Nonetheless, for me, it was the breaking ball that impressed me so much with Clayton Kershaw today. It looked like he didn't skip a beat. He got his first win of the season, and it was well-earned as we welcome in Craig Gajon here on the program. Craig, as I talked a little bit about Freddie in the first segment, we'll get to him in a minute, but I'm talking about Clayton right now, and Kershaw, as I'm looking at the numbers, he threw more sliders than any other pitch, and I know you've seen a lot of Clayton Kershaw's career. If I would have told you in 2015 that in 9 years, Kershaw's going to be throwing majority breaking balls as opposed to his fastball, it's proof that an old dog can learn new tricks.
Yeah, well, I mean, how many guys last that long, though, that have to perform the new tricks, right, to keep going? And very few can be as effective, though, and last and be as effective as, obviously, that Kershaw has. So, I don't know. This was one of those games where I just thought going in, it's his fourth start since he came off the injury list, been injured all year, that he had an opportunity against, you know, a mixed lineup that the Brewers possess here right now of some veterans and some young guys. And, you know, the one moment that stood out to me was the fifth inning when Adames led off with a single, then Sanchez was out. And then I thought he pitched around Hoskins so he could get to Frelick and Ortiz to finish things up. And that's exactly what he did. You know, I don't know if he did that on purpose, but it sure looked like it to me. But that's also what he was afforded, I think, with this lineup here tonight as well. And the Brewers, you know, they're hitting the ball a little bit better against lefties lately, but the bottom line is wins, losses, and they're still not beating left-handed starters.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about pitching around Hoskins, and I know Kershaw had a couple of walks tonight, but I think one calling card of how dominant or how well a pitcher pitches is even when they're getting strikeouts, how many whiffs, how many swings and misses is he getting? And the answer was very few. In fact, at the end of the day, Kershaw only had 5 swings and misses after, what was it, 90 pitches or so from today's outing. He was getting weak contact today. And this was the stat that really sort of surprised me today from the Brewers, specifically against Clayton Kershaw. There were some hard hits. I mean, Williams' double was 111 off the bat. He had a ground at 109 off the bat. Churio had a couple of hard hit balls as well off of Kershaw. But aside from that, a clean single from Adames was at 98. Nobody else got over 95. I mean, even the outs were not hit that hard, aside from the William and Jackson outs. No one else was able to barrel Clayton Kershaw today because the slider was so effective and because of the way that he understood how to pick apart such a young lineup who grew up watching him in the big leagues. Now at 36 years young, he's facing them and understands what it takes to get these guys out.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, insane when you put it that way, but it's so true. And we've seen that before, you know, with guys that just have been around the league 15, 20 years. And then, you know, maybe a young rookie out of your whole lineup, maybe facing him and maybe being all a little bit. But I mean, you know, they hardly see this guy, whether you're especially if a first year player, but even some of the second year guys, you know, like Frelick and Terang, and it's something. It just is. And I just think, you know, Kershaw is just so good. I don't know much, you know, how much longer he wants to pitch, Dom, but it just seems to me, I mean, as long as he's healthy, he can keep going for a while here. I don't even want to say decline, because like all the things that we're talking about, all the adjustments he's made during his career, his latter portion of his career, is what veteran guys do. And, you know, it, to me, I mean, I've seen him a lot, and it's been something to watch. I think that's the beauty of baseball, when guys like that can make adjustments. Very few other guys in sports can make an adjustment like that and still compete at such a high level.
He's been impressive. I would also encourage, I mentioned this on the pregame show today, I recently finished The Last of His Kind, which is by Andy McCullough, a longtime LA Times beat writer of these Dodgers. It's all about Clayton Kershaw, the last of his kind. And it's just about the fact that every fifth day, this dude expects to go 7 innings, even when pitchers were hitting, even now, and doesn't care about pitch counts, wants to throw, establish his fastball, just an old-school pitcher in today's modern game. Really, really would encourage folks to check out that book on Clayton Kershaw. Now, I wanted to give you the floor here a little bit, because I spent the whole first segment talking about Freddie Peralta, and it's just that my takeaway here, Craig, is that I know that he's a quote-unquote number one. and he was the opening day starter. He opened the second half. Simply put, he has not performed like a number one. And we talked about it previously that if the playoffs started tomorrow, I would have Colin Ray start game one, not Freddy Peralta. But the big thing that jumped out to me is the fact that he's just not a stopper. Since the Brewers started 6-0 in his starts back in the first month of the season, since then they are just 8-10. Just because he's not a number one doesn't mean he's a bad pitcher, but it's just bad timing for him to have his worst season as a big leaguer when the Brewers needed him to be the one.
Absolutely, and it's tough to put your finger on why this is happening to Freddie. It just is, Dom. We've talked about this, you know, several times. His numbers, when you look at the end of the day, his numbers never look bad. I mean, rarely do they look bad. But they certainly don't look effective when it's pretty much consistently four runs on the board in four, five, maybe six innings of work. And some guys just, you know, can't turn that corner. And right now I'm not seeing Freddie turn that corner. I mean, he's continues to fall behind in counts. It's kind of puzzling when you get to the bottom of the order and you're facing, a batter or two that isn't even hitting 200, you know, for the second half of the season, and you're walking guys, you're giving up key base hits, 6, 7, 8, 9. They all got on base at least once in this game, and they scored a couple of runs against him as well because the big boppers came up at the top. So I think there's a lot going on right now with Freddie, and I think the last time you and I did a show together, I said something about maybe skipping a start. I'm not sure if they just need to, you know, find a way to hit the reset button with him. I don't think he's that far off, but he's far enough off where you wonder how this season is going to wind up and how effective as a starter he is going to be for you down the stretch here. Because I think now we're getting pretty close to crunch time. We're in mid-August, and I don't care that the Brewers have this huge lead here right now, but they may need this huge lead here right now, you know, with him out on the mound. He hasn't won much lately in the last couple of months, so I think it is a little bit concerning.
Looking at it, I'm just counting out the dates right now here on the calendar, 6, 7. He's probably got 8 more regular season starts. Okay, do we have, just off the top of our head here, not necessarily a personal, like, Freddy Peralta's pitching record, but if the Brewers can find a way, let's say it's 8 starts, maybe it's 9, but let's say it's 8 more starts for Freddy Peralta. I mean, at minimum, you got to be 5-3. I would hope you can find a way to be 6-2, regardless of the opponent in games that Freddy Peralta starts, and that starts with Freddy Peralta trying to find a way to get the job done.
Right, and that's not Freddy Peralta winning those games necessarily. It's right. Certainly the Brewers winning when he's on the mound. Now, look, they had some chances here to win this game. They didn't have huge threats, we know that, but it was still very close. You know, with the Contreras home run, it cut it down to 4-2, and then Brian Hudson gives up a run, and it's still a 5-2 game, though. It's still very much within striking distance, and yes, that's how the season has gone. But with Freddie out there, it's become the only consistent right now, consistency with Freddie on the mound is his inconsistent pitching right now. I mean, I don't know how else to term it. And you just can't, you know, wave a magic wand and make it all go away. I mean, he was at 96 pitches over 6 innings, but he only threw 56 strikes. I mean, it's just another sign of being behind too often. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're behind Ohtani. He's going to hit a ball wherever he wants to. And we saw that on his home run. That 3-0 pitch wasn't even in the strike zone.
Yeah, exactly that. I think he mis-executed on the Mookie Betts homer, and then the home run to Shohei Ohtani is like a, well, I mean, it was 3-0. I didn't throw him a strike, and then he hit a homer. So that was also the first career 3-0 homer for Shohei Ohtani. He's not a guy that swings super often on 3-0. Let's shift gears, talk a little bit about some offensive contributors, or lack thereof, if you will. Brewers fall tonight 5-2. A couple texts in here as well, 855-616-1620 on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Brewers fall 5-2 in game one of a four-game set against the Dodgers. I'm Dominic Catronio. The good news is the Cardinals also lost, so you don't lose any ground. You still remain 7.5 games up on the Dodgers as the Brewers now at 67-51. I can't believe it, but there's only, what, 44 games left on the season here, Craig? It's going to be over in the blink of an eye, and it ain't early anymore, but there ain't much time left either. It's getting real, real fast.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, you know, with Peralta's situation. I mean, you're right, and it is, and this is getting fun. And right now, just the fact that they have this big league, you got to feel good about that. But I'm telling you, you can't take anything for granted. We've seen this in Brewer history before. Down the stretch, a lot of teams have to deal with big leads when it starts to become crunch time, and you want guys to step up. And right now, you know, guys have stepped up at certain times. Hitters have stepped up. Pitchers have stepped up. And when it meshes together, this is a really good team. When it doesn't, you want guys to pick up one another, and I think that's what's going to be crucial down the stretch here. Are we going to see that, you know, enough so they can secure this division and continue to push, you know, for a top two seeding and get that bye? Because, man, it is amazing the job that they have done all season long to get it this close to the Dodgers and the Phillies for one of those top two seeds.
Yeah, and it may not even be the Dodgers, the team that need to chase it. They still could be the Phillies, because the Phillies have been in free fall. Those two teams entered today with the exact same record. The Phillies tonight were idle, so the Brewers will remain back of them now by a full game. They're a game and a half back of the Dodgers. And still, the Brewers can turn around and win the next three games of this series. It would be difficult, but it's not impossible. And then they would win the season series and be sitting in the two seed if things ended there. Let's talk a little about offense here. First, a bright spot, William Contreras. 111-mile-an-hour double off of Clayton Kershaw, and then an opposite-field homer on a 99-mile-an-hour fastball off Joe Kelly. If William Contreras is going to start getting hot, going 2-for-3 with a walk today, where do I sign? Because him in a cleanup spot has really been working out well for him.
Yeah, it really has, for sure. I mean, big night for him. And it follows, yesterday was the ejection, correct, Dom?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know what's going to spark a guy either or put him over the top. And, you know, today was good. The one thing, and I'm looking at the box score here with how I have things scored. My one mystery, I was not listening on the broadcast at that time in the second inning to pick up what B.A. and Rock had said, but that strike him out, throw him out in the second inning when he was headed to third was very bizarre. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, if you thought that there was already three outs or what, but after that, though, I mean, the dude's good, and he can carry a club. We know what he did at the beginning of the season. It would be great to see him do this to finish things up.
Yeah, you led me into the bad. Like, I started with the good. Now I'm like, what the heck was he doing there? I don't want it to be like, oh my God, that's the reason the Brewers lost the game. I was just like, that was a moment, too, because the game was still scoreless, and you had first and second and one out. Hoskins is battling for his life. He works 9 pitches, and he strikes out, and Contreras is trying to steal third for some reason. I don't know if it didn't look like he thought there were two outs, because he would have been running on the previous pitches because there were foul balls. And I don't know if he saw something from Kershaw and then was surprised by the slide step. I was so shell-shocked by that mistake, and then, of course, the Dodgers follow up with a 2-run home run in the third inning, because it always happens like that. A texter here, Austin Point from Poinette, asking about Bryce Turang. And Turang had a tough day again today, and all of his at-bats came against a left-handed pitcher, 0-for-4 with a pair of strikeouts, both of them looking. For Turang, the season numbers against lefties still aren't pretty, and he's been getting opportunities against lefties. This was his second time leading off a game against a left-hander, but he had been starting games in the 9 spot. I remember against the Marlins, when he wasn't in the lineup at all, we were begging, just put him in there. Well, now, all of a sudden, we've got a sample size now. It's a .227 average. It's a sub-300 on-base percentage. He's just simply not the same guy against lefties, and I don't want to take him out of the order, but I think you need to reassess keeping him in the top of the spot when you're facing a southpaw.
Yeah, I was almost a little surprised to see that today, but you know, part of me wants to believe that they're at least in a position to give him these learning opportunities and see how he handles it, see if he has any success. To me, it almost goes back to last year, you know, during his rookie season. You have to battle through things. You have to hit plateaus that are positive and get something out of it and find a way to move up to that next step. I don't know if that's part of the plan here or not, but it almost seems like at least they've reached that point with Terang in his young career that they want him to be that guy. They want to keep him at the top of the lineup, no matter if it's righty lefty. So perhaps that's part of this experiment right now, and perhaps you can do that when you have a big division lead too. I'm not sure, but look, you know, they're still missing Yelich. They're still trying to figure out these lineups. They're still trying to figure out how to get guys collectively out of slumps and not be 0 for the homestand so far, or 1 for, you know, 15 for the homestand so far. I mean, there's a lot of that offensively. This team's only scored, what, 6 runs over their last 3 games. So they're in that downward swing again.
Yeah, and this was a stat that just blew my mind. Sometimes you forget to do check-ins on your own team when I'm diving in onto the opposing team. Bryce Terang in the second half, have you seen this, Craig? He is only hitting 153 since the All-Star break. Furthermore, the home run he hit the other day against the Reds, that was his first extra base hit of the second half. There's something, you know, could it be fatigue? Could it be just the long season? Could it be an adjustment against him? But Terang, man, he's ice cold right now, to say the least, and maybe he stays in the leadoff spot against righties, but I don't see a reason to keep him up there even this high. Maybe try to find a way to give him a breather, and it makes more sense why we've seen so much of Andrew Monasterio as of late.
Well, maybe, and here's the other thing, in my opinion, if you're willing to move pretty much everyone else around in the lineup, I mean, you've already got Contreras moved down to that cleanup spot. You've got Willie in the 5 spot. You've got Reese all the way down in the 7 spot right now. If you're willing to do that with those guys, I say maybe you should be willing to, you know, experiment with someone else at the top of the order. Maybe give them a few games as a shot up there. And you know, Terang's batted 9th a lot too. We've seen that. We've seen success there as well. So I'm with you. If you're going to do it, this is the time to do it, because you're already moving other guys around and you're still trying to make up offensively for the loss of Yelich at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you got nothing to lose. I mean, all you can do is lose the season series tomorrow if you lose the game. So might as well shake things up against the young right-hander in Gavin Stone. Craig Ashon, appreciate you as always. We'll talk to you again tomorrow and all week long here on WTMJ. Thanks, Craig.
All right, sounds good, Dom.
All right, Craig Ashon joining us here on your home of the Brewers. We'll talk a little bit about the season standings and what the Brewers need to do here down the stretch. And, yes, I've seen the commentary, like, well, they can't beat good teams. We'll break that down next here on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
A couple bright spots to point out as we move off of this game and kind of look at a bigger scope. Brewers fall 5-2 to the Dodgers. I'm Dominic Catronio. Bryce Wilson, 6 up and 6 down. Sneaky important. Getting Brian Hudson back was big. I know it wasn't his most effectiveness, but yet it feels like the only team that's getting runs off of him is the Dodgers. He walked Shohei Ohtani with 2 outs and got ahead of Betts 0-2, but there's a reason why Betts is one of the best hitters in the game. He ends up poking a single the other way for an RBI hit. That made it 5-2, and that was really all she wrote for both teams. The Dodgers didn't get another hit. The Brewers didn't get another hit after the 6th inning. Also a bright spot, Gary Sanchez on base a couple more times, including an opposite field single. Willie a couple more hits today. Those are a few bright spots from this one. I've seen the commentary. Brewers can't beat the good team. Brewers can't beat the big team. Why can't they get it done, Dom? Why can't they do it? Okay, you're right. They've not had a great schedule against teams that are, quote-unquote, in the playoff race. However, you know, you can point out that they're 2-5 against the Padres, and they're one of the best teams in the National League. They haven't played the Diamondbacks yet. Let's see what happens there. But they lost a series to the Yankees. Now, the Yankees were hitting their peak there in late April, early May, and now they're a very different team. You also conveniently ignore they swept the Mets. They've won 3 out of 4 against the Twins. They've still won the season series against the Cubs, and the Cubs are still flirting with 500. They can certainly get above it. They're frisky in this wild card race right now. They went 4-2 against the Braves. They still won a series at Fenway. They won a series at Camden. They won a series against the Mariners. So you can pick and choose all you want of the games that, you know, they can't beat a good team. No, they're 0-3 against the Phillies. Well, what about when the Phillies come here for a 4-game set? What if the Brewers win 3 out of 4 there? There's still season to be played and stuff to be figured out. Being 1-3 against the Dodgers, it stings. But let's hold judgment until the fat lady's singing. She's warming up, but she ain't singing yet. And we'll figure things out from there. In my opinion, the Brewers can still win the season series against the Cardinals. They can finish 12-1 against the Cardinals, for all we know, and dominate this Central Division. And even if they're still the 3 seed and they don't make it out of the wild card round, like they only go to the wild card round and they're in the postseason, That's not satisfying, but they have a chance. Just get in. Then anything can happen. I'm not saying the Brewers are going to be satisfied with just getting to the wild card round if they get bounced in the wild card round. No one will be satisfied with that. I will not be satisfied with that. The Brewers in the front office would not be satisfied with that. That's why I think it's so important for them to try to get this second seed and move on. Whereas if you can win these next 3 games against the Dodgers, you set yourself up. Now, the Phillies come here later on. The Phillies will come here in September. It's a 3-game set, I beg your pardon, not a 4-game set. So the Brewers would need to sweep to match that season series, and then it goes to divisional record after that. But maybe they'll just have a better record than them for the second seed, because that could certainly help things down the stretch. This is part of a gauntlet there at the start of September, where the Brewers will play Giants, Diamondbacks, Phillies, Diamondbacks, Pirates, Mets. And the Pirates will probably be out of it by then, but they could still have Skeens throwing or something. So they're going to have quite a gauntlet down the stretch here for the crew. Pat Murphy coming up next as the Brewers fall by a 5-2 score here on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Couple of texts here. Brian and Kenosha with a good one here. Freddie has never been an ace. He's never claimed to be an ace. He's never had ace numbers and doesn't get paid like an ace. He's a solid 3 or 4, and he always has been. Don't blame him. Don't blame the front office for not replacing Burns and Woodruff. We weren't supposed to be this good yet, so just enjoy this team for what it is. And you can look ahead to next year. Woodruff would start opening day if everything goes according to plan. You got Freddie, you got Ray, you got Hall, you got Myers, you got Mizorowski on the way, you got Chad Patrick on the way. If you're picking up what I'm putting down, they might be a little bit early right now for their thing. What's the record for the Brewers against above 500 teams? As I'm pulling that up right now, the crew, stand by, live stats research here. Ding, 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 ding. The Brewers this season against teams above 500 are 30-25, including tonight. So they're 5 games above 500 against teams that are above 500, and that does not include any games against the Cubs right now, since the Cubs are currently below 500. Doesn't include any games against the Pirates. They're below 500, so still a solid season, to say the least. The Brewers still got plenty of time, but Pat Murphy had some honesty for the media today after today's loss.
He's a consummate pitcher, you know, like this guy is Hall of Famer for a reason. And, you know, he'd be the first to tell you his stuff isn't as good, but he knows how to pitch, and that kid behind the plate is one of the most underrated players in the game. And people all know about him, but that kid's good, and they work together good. And, yeah, I haven't seen our young guys respond that way. You know what I mean? I haven't seen our young guys kind of seem like that, you know, the moment was a lot. You know, and a little surprised, but Kershaw was great. He deserves everything he's going to get in this game. He works his tail off, and, you know, I've heard he's an incredible leader, and, you know, so he was good. We still had our chances.
As far as those young guys, I mean, is that then what you'll take away from a night like tonight? Is you hope, well, what do you hope they come away from tonight with?
Yeah, this is it, man. If you want to swim with the sharks, you got to be willing to step up in these situations and put together, forget about who's on the mound. I mean, and forget about, you know, it's baseball. It's pitch by pitch. And I'm not disappointed at any, I mean, I'm not mad at anybody or anything like that. I just felt like we didn't have the right approach there mentally for situation, but it is, they're young guys and in front of their hometown crowd, and it's Kershaw, so that means something. So we did some good things, and we put ourselves, we were close enough, and you think about it, give up 5 runs today, 2 home runs that you can't take away. You know, Jackson made a great effort to get the one, but you know, 2 of the best players in the game hit a home run. I thought Freddie Peralta was fantastic, but the 4 runs came on 2 infield hits and 2 home runs. And then the last run came on because we didn't hold a runner. We walked a guy with 2 outs and nobody on. We didn't hold a runner, and we gave up, you know, we went from 0-2 to 3-2 to give up the hit with not holding a runner, and that changed, that made it, you know, that's a little thing. So you think of the 2 infield hits and not holding a runner, going from 0-2 to 3-2, and again, granted, another great player got the hit. But we had our opportunity, you know, to do that. So,
yeah, he's laid it out there for you. You certainly had an opportunity. I love that line. You want to swim the sharks, you got to jump in the pool. So the Brewers are learning what that takes right now, and they maybe had their eyes twinkle a little bit seeing an all-time great like Clayton Kershaw tonight. We'll wrap up the program with at least a highlight here in Bob Uecker call a William Contreras homer. That's coming up next here on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Brewers Extra Innings brought to you by Sider Heating, Plumbing, and Electrical, waiving their $99 trip fee for HVAC service calls. Visit Sider.com to visit and schedule an appointment today before it's too late. That's Sider, Sider.com. This one from Mark and West Bend, you know, doubling down on what you said earlier. I get that. You can feel that way. Talk about it with 29 other teams. There's a reason the other 29 other teams haven't done it. He's just not the same pitcher anymore. With that being said, the Brewers having the option DL Hall out today, because they have so many starters in this rotation right now, they want to keep DL on a regular starting rotation and having to fit him in and plug him like every 6th or 7th day. Like, no, they want to keep him regular and get him back here hopefully by the end of the season. And some folks are worried about burning his final option year. Now, if he's back and he stays in the big leagues within the next 20 days, he is able to not lose that option year. However, you cannot bring him back sooner than 15 days if it's not for an injury. And lastly, there is a doubleheader in 18 days. One way you can bring him back is be the 27th man of a doubleheader. That's in Cincinnati in 18 days. And then if he stays, you don't burn that option here. So that's just me speculating and looking ahead here for what he could be looking at for the crew. We're right back here tomorrow. A couple of things to look out for with this one. The crew, and it'll be Colin Ray taking the ball tomorrow, going up against Gavin Stone. Same time, same place, 7:10 first pitch. We're on the air at 6 o'clock with Brewers warm-up. The on-deck show will take over at 6:35. And then I'll be in here as well for postgame. And we're also on national TV again tomorrow, but it's not an exclusive. So if you're one of the folks that syncs up your television, you can still watch it on Bally. Or maybe if you're listening on the podcast and you're out of market, Tuesday's game is on TBS, and you'll hear a familiar voice, Brian Anderson and Jeff Francoeur on the call. 7:10 tomorrow, 7:10 on Wednesday, and then 1:10 on Thursday. The Brewers are still 7.5 games up. It's all A-OK. My thanks to our producer, Matt Yazel. I'm Dom Catronio. Until next time, keep on swinging.